Hi, it's Patrick Hutzel from IntensiveCareHotline.com, where we instantly improve the lives for families of critically ill patients in intensive care so that you can make informed decisions, have peace of mind, real power, real control, and so that you can influence decision-making fast, even if you're not a doctor or a nurse in intensive care. This is another episode of Your Questions Answered. And in last week's episode, I answered another question from one of our readers. And last week was part 13 of My 68-Year-Old Mother is in Intensive Care with Gastric Perforation and is not waking up after the surgery. Will she need a tracheostomy? You can check out last week's episode by clicking on the link below this video. In this week's episode of Your Questions Answered, I want to answer the next question from my client, Robert, which are excerpts from email counseling and consulting sessions with me. And the question this week is part 14 of My 68-Year-Old Mother is in Intensive Care with Gastric Perforation and she's not waking up after the surgery. Will she need a tracheostomy? You can find previous questions from this series of questions answered if you're clicking on the link below or on the links below this video. I put links to all the previous episodes in the written version of this blog. And if you're watching this video on YouTube, click on the link below this video. That'll get you to our website where you find all the other episodes. So Robert continues with his mother's situation as follows. He writes, "Hi Patrick, thank you for your last email. It's good to know that pain management trumps waking up. That seems to be how they are thinking about it as well. They did mention that the dialysis will mask her temperature and so we need to adjust based on that. One of the doctors also said the white blood cell count is a better marker or signal for infection than a temperature. Today her temperature has been between 98 to 99.5 Fahrenheit, which is about 36.7 to 37.5 Celsius. I will ask about albumin, hemoglobin levels, and the possibility of liver functioning issues. They're testing her platelets every 6 hours or so we will know where those stand in a few hours. I also talked to the ICU nurse a bit. They're testing her bloods every 6 hours, which gives us hemoglobin, white cell count, and platelets. The hemoglobin level on the last test was 7.3. She said that if it drops below 7, then they usually do a blood transfusion. Many thanks from Robert." Before I give my response to Robert's email, just want to quickly remind you that if you want one-on-one email, phone, counseling and consulting with me, check out the options on the top of the website and then I'll talk to you whenever you made your selection, what works best for you. So here's my response. "Hi Robert, it's reassuring to hear that they are checking blood levels every 6 hours. Yes, sometimes hemoglobin level scales can vary by one decimal point, but even a hemoglobin level of 7 to 7.3 grams per deciliter, which equals 70 to 73, is still suggesting a major bleed or a chronic bleed, especially if she had blood transfused already. 60 to 69 for platelets is concerning as well. Normal levels are 150 to 450. Also, I agree that as long as your mother is on the dialysis machine, her temperature readings will be inaccurate to a degree because the blood will be cooling down whilst running through the dialysis machine. And yes, white cell count is a much better parameter to assess if an infection is present, on the decline or on the rise. Keep asking the right questions to get to the bottom of things. Especially if your mother keeps bleeding and hemoglobin levels are dropping, they need to find out what's happening. I'm looking forward to your next update." And here is Rob's next update. He writes, "Hi Patrick, there have been no concerns about liver function issues or liver failure. Albumin level is about 3 and has been reasonably stable. Also, the dark blood we were seeing coming out of her nose tube is no longer there. Now it's just greenish stuff, which the nurse says is bile and it's normal. She's not out of the woods yet, of course. What makes me feel a bit better that the dark blood is no longer coming out in her nasal tube. By the way, she's still getting nutrients via the intravenous line because they don't want to irritate the gut by putting a feeding tube in. Next, the full blood count will be sent down in about 3 to 4 hours. Many thanks from Robert. So here is my response. Hi, Rob. I really was worried about liver failure and low albumin levels, and it's good that it's off the table for now. It still leaves the question why she's having low platelets. I still don't understand where all the abdominal fluids have come from, especially in light of the fact that they had to drain it. It's a good sign that the bleeding seems to have stopped for now. It looks like she may have had a gastric or a stomach bleed if you have observed that old blood has been coming out of the nasogastric tube. A number of things in intensive care can lead to a gastric or stomach bleed, and patients are often prone to it. Let me explain. When patients are admitted to intensive care for critical illness, their bodies are under huge stress. One way the body responds to stress is by producing acid in the stomach. This could cause an ulcer, eventually leading to a bleed. One way to identify the location of a gastric or stomach bleed is to do a gastroscopy, which is basically a video camera down the esophagus into the stomach. Because the evidence is there that if critically ill patients in intensive care don't get either fed early through the nasogastric tube and also get proton pump inhibitors such as pantoprazole, which is also known as SOMAC, or ranitidine to prevent acid production in the stomach, patients are much more likely to end up with a gastric bleed. Especially with your mother being under so much stress in recent months, with being in intensive care in basically 3 different countries, her body would have been under enormous stress. You see, prolonging the intravenous feeds, which are also known as TPN or total parenteral nutrition, versus enteral feeds via the nasogastric tube that would go directly into her stomach, it concerns me a little, since it would now be around 1 week since she had surgery and was put on the IV nutrition or TPN. As I mentioned in one of my earlier emails, normally there is a tendency to feed early and often via the nasogastric tube into the stomach, because it reduces the risk of gastric or stomach bleeding as it maintains a normal and healthy gut flora, and it also maintains a normal pH level in the stomach to reduce acid production that can often lead to gastric perforation. Given that your mother had such a perforation and is now potentially bleeding somewhere in the abdomen, I do believe they should lean towards nasogastric feeds, as well as medically trying to reduce the risk for bleeding by giving proton pump inhibitors such as pantoprazole or ranitidine. Furthermore, even if they think that your mother is not quite ready for enteral or nasogastric feeds as yet, they could, for example, start with 20 mL per hour nasogastric feeds and see how she can tolerate it, and then gradually reduce the IV nutrition or the TPN. 1 week of IV nutrition after surgery appears to be a long time, and from my experiences, as well as from a lot of research that is out there, there should be more of a bias towards enteral and nasogastric feeding, especially with abdominal bleeding. Maybe there is something else going on that you haven't shared or that you're not aware of why they are continuing with the TPN for now. I hope that at least your mother is on the pantoprazole infusion or on regular ranitidine to inhibit the acid production in her stomach and therefore minimize the risk for any further bleeding. The situation overall remains very critical from the information you are sharing, but given that she's off blood pressure medications and the inotropes for now, she's off the flagyl with white cell count coming down, and given that she's now on dialysis to manage the fluid balance, as well as her trying to wake up, even though she's still getting pain medications, overall this is encouraging. There's still lots of challenges to work through, especially with the bleeding and the potential abdominal fluid accumulation. I really hope that you and your family are okay. We keep talking about all the clinical stuff, which I believe is important, but at the same time, given that there seems to be no end in sight for now, I really hope that you and your family are okay keeping your sanity. I know it's been a long and tough ride, including the hospital stay in Brazil, plus the flight back to the United States, with now all the battles she's continuing to fight. The good news is she's fighting, and so are you and your family. I also can't see any hint that they're not trying to do their best, although they may still be negative. For now, my advice is to stay strong, stay positive, and I wish you and your family all the very best until I hear back from you. So, how can you become the best advocate for your critically ill loved one? How can you make informed decisions, get peace of mind, control, power, and influence quickly whilst your loved one is critically ill in intensive care? You get to that all-important feeling of making informed decisions, get peace of mind, control, power, and influence when you download your free instant impact report now by entering your email below. In your free instant impact report, you learn quickly how to make informed decisions, get peace of mind, real power, and real control, and how you can influence decision-making fast whilst your loved one is critically ill in intensive care. Your free instant impact report gives you in-depth insight that you must know whilst your loved one is critically ill or is even dying in intensive care. Sign up and download your free instant impact report now by entering your email below. In your free instant impact report, you learn how to speak the secret intensive care language so that the doctors and the nurses know straight away that you are an insider and that you know and understand what's really happening in intensive care. In your free report, you will also discover how to ask the doctors and the nurses the right questions, discover the many competing interests in intensive care, and how your critically ill loved one's treatment may depend on those competing interests. How to eliminate fear, frustration, stress, struggle, and vulnerability, even if your loved one is dying. You get 5 mind-blowing tips and strategies helping you to get on the right path to making informed decisions, get peace of mind, control, power, and influence in your situation. You'll get real-world examples that you can easily adapt to your and your critically ill loved one's situation. How to stop being intimidated by the intensive care team and how you will be seen as equals. You'll get crucial behind-the-scenes insight so that you know and understand what is really happening in intensive care and how you need to manage doctors and nurses in intensive care, and it's not what you think. Thank you for tuning into this week's Your Questions Answered episode. And I'll see you again next week in another update. Make sure you also check out our blog section for more tips and strategies, or simply send me an email to support@intensivecarehotline.com with your questions. Or you can call me, find international phone numbers on our contacts tab. Also, check out our ebook section where you get more ebooks, videos, and audio recordings, and where you can also get one-on-one counseling and consulting with me via Skype, over the phone, or via email by clicking on the tabs on the top of the website. This is Patrick Hutzel from intensivecarehotline.com, and I'll see you again next week in another update.